Today we come to a set of parables that Jesus teaches. We have looked at these parables numerous times individually. But today I want us to look at the three of them together because they are said together, they are written together, and they form a triumvirate that all address the same issue. Matthew chapter 24, three of the last parables that Jesus will ever teach, they all have the same theme. Matthew 24, beginning at verse 45. Who then is the faithful and wise servant, whom his master has put in charge of the servants in his household to give them their food at the proper time? It will be good for that servant whose master finds him doing so when he returns. I tell you the truth, he will put him in charge of all his possessions. But suppose that servant is wicked and says to himself, my master is staying away a long time. He begins to beat his fellow servants and eat and drink with drunkards. The master of that servant will come on a day when he does not expect him, and at an hour he is not aware of, he will cut him to pieces and assign him a place with the hypocrites, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. At that time, the kingdom of heaven will be like 10 virgins who took their lamps and went out to meet the bridegroom. 5 of them were foolish and 5 were wise. The foolish ones took their lamps, but they did not take any oil, or the context is extra oil, with them. The wise, however, took oil in jars along with their lamps. The bridegroom was a long time in coming, and they all became drowsy and fell asleep. At midnight, the cry rang out, here's the bridegroom, come out to meet him. Then all the virgins woke up and trimmed their lamps. The foolish one said to the wise, give us some of your oil, my lamp is going out. No, they replied, there may not be enough for both us and you. Instead, go to those who sell oil and buy some for yourselves. But while they were on their way to buy the oil, the bridegroom arrived. The virgins who were ready went in with him to the wedding banquet, and the door was shut. Later, the others also came. Sir, sir! They cried, open the door to us! He replied, I tell you the truth, I don't know you. Therefore keep watch, because you do not know the day or hour. Again, it will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted his property to them. To one he gave 5 talents of money, to another 2 talents, and to another 1 talent, each according to his ability. Then he went on his journey. The man who had received the 5 talents went at once and put his money to work and gained 5 more. So also the one with 2 talents gained 2 more. But the man that had received the 1 talent went off, dug a hole in the ground, and hid his master's money. After a long time, the master of those servants returned and settled accounts with them. The man who had received the 5 talents brought the other 5. Master, he said, you entrusted me with 5 talents? See, I've gained 5 more. His master replied, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. The man with the 2 talents also came. Master, he said, you entrusted me with 2 talents. See, I have gained 2 more. His master replied, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many many things. Come and share your master's happiness. Then the man who had received the one talent came. Master, he said, I knew that you were a hard man, harvesting where you had not sown and gathering where you had not scattered seed. So I was afraid and went out and hid your talent in the ground. See, here is what belongs to you. His master replied, you wicked, lazy servant. So you knew that I harvest where I had not sown and gather where I have not scattered seed? Well then, you should have put my money on deposit with the bankers, so that when I returned, I would have received it back with interest. Take the talent from him and give it to the one who has 10. For everyone who has will be given more, and he will have an abundance. Whoever does not have, even what he has will be taken from him. Throw that worthless servant outside into the darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Perhaps you've never read those three parables together as I have just done. Perhaps when you have read them, they have been separated out individually and you have looked at them one at a time. But today, I want us to look at these three parables together and see how all three of them communicate the same thing. Now, the fact that Jesus takes the time to give this same list of teachings, this same group of teachings, three different ways in three different parables back to back ought to tell us it's fairly important, wouldn't you think? We need to see, first of all, that these parables are at the very end of Jesus' life. Within a few days, he will go to the cross. These are some of his final teachings before his death and resurrection. This is sort of like his last words. You know how when somebody's getting ready to die, they take that as being very important? If someone points the finger at you on their deathbed and says, he did this, that, or the other thing, they take that very seriously because they call it a dying declaration. People seem to understand that when you're facing eternity, somehow that clarifies your life and brings into focus what's truly important. I don't believe that Jesus suffered from the disease that we have of being captivated by this world, but certainly as his time grows short, Jesus knows that he has little more time to reemphasize what he is going to say, and so he hits topics of tremendous importance. And these three parables all address the same issues. And I want us to look at seven things about them. Seven things that they all have in common that Jesus is trying to tell us. First of all, number one, he addresses this to us. This is our mail. Notice what he says. Look at Matthew 24:45. Who then is that faithful and wise servant? Matthew 25:14, the beginning of the parable of the talents. Again, it will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants. Two of the parables are addressed to servants, not to outsiders. Not to other people, not to those who reject him or to his enemies, but to those who claim to love him, those who claim to follow him, those who he is willing to entrust with important issues. Notice the third group, the parable of the virgins. They were 10 wedding attendants. I don't know about you, but it's generally a great honor to be invited to be part of a wedding, is it not? I don't know very many people that invite strangers or outsiders or enemies to stand with them at their wedding. So these are people with whom Jesus has a relationship. And more than that, they are people that he entrusted with something that was vitally important to him. The first, it is a steward who he entrusts the overseeing of his household while he's gone. I don't know how many of you have pets, but one of the miserable things about pets is going away. Because pets usually don't travel well. We were driving up Friday to see Moses at Sight and Sound, and Mark and Hannah went with us. They had gotten tickets. And we were driving up 896. Who here has ever been on 896 through Lancaster? Isn't that a great road? Wahoo! Yeah, and the hills, woo, ease up. And we're driving up through there, and Kathy goes, now you've got to tell them where our first dog threw up as we were driving. And yes, that's vitally important to information. Pets don't generally travel well, so you've got to leave them at home, which raises the issue of who takes care of the pets. Well, in those days, a household was a major affair. You had servants to oversee. You had chores to be done. You had animals to feed. And this servant was put in charge of making sure that the entire household ran smoothly. Place of great honor. In the second, the parable of the 10 virgins, they were entrusted with lighting the way to the wedding. Now, we take that for granted. You walk outside and there's street lights. You take your little flashlight, and we used to have, when we were at Creation, we used to have flashlight wars. And we would get bigger and bigger and more powerful and brighter. These, back in those days, they you know, compared to the stuff they have now with the, but those big square 6-volt battery ones that weigh about 5, or the ones with about 15D batteries in them. And then we'd wait till it kind of got smoky, and we'd do Star Wars in the sky. You'd turn on your light, and see who had the brightest flashlight. They didn't have these flashlights that lit up the night. It got dark. Most of us have never lived in a time or place where it truly gets dark. Almost wherever you go today, there is a light someplace, no matter how far out you are. You can see a light in the night. That wasn't the case in Jesus' day. And these 10 people were entrusted with the task of lighting the way for the bridegroom to come to the wedding. And in the last, they were entrusted with a great deal of money. Talent was a year's wages. What's a year's wages today? $30,000, $40,000, $50,000? One of them five times that. So this is our mail. This is given to us because we are those servants. We are those virgins. We are those people who are entrusted with that, or at least so we claim. Second of all, Jesus warns them to be prepared. In fact, the theme of this is about being prepared. Notice how he sets up these parables. Look at Matthew chapter 24, verse 42. Matthew 24, 42. Therefore, keep watch, because you do not know on what day your Lord will come. Keep watch. He says, then, in each of the parables, you need to be ready. Notice Matthew 24, 50. Matthew 24, 50. The master of that servant will come on a day when he does not expect him and an hour he is not aware of. Notice, first of all, it was not an expected time. One of the things that a lot of us, myself included, used to do when we were in college is you'd mark the days for final exams. When you got ready, the professor would, first day of class as you showed up, the professor would give you a syllabus. And it would have on there the date, first test or midterm or final. You had all the time in the world to prepare. You know when you prepared? About 3 in the morning of, right? But Jesus says, it isn't like that. There's no professor giving you a syllabus with when it's going to happen. He says, first of all, you need to be prepared because it's not going to be expected. There's not an announced day. Remember those days of school long ago when you'd show up for school and there would be a surprise quiz? A pop quiz? Do they still give them in school? Oh, yeah. And they were to show who was prepared. Jesus says, this is one pop quiz you better be ready for. Notice the second thing he says about it. Look at Matthew 25, 6. Matthew 25, 6. At midnight, the cry rang out, here's the bridegroom, come out to meet him. Matthew 25, 6. He says, second of all, it will happen at an inconvenient time. Now, had he come at noon, how many of those virgins would have been ready? If he'd have come at 8 in the morning, how many of them would have been ready? If he'd have come at 4 in the afternoon, how many of them would have been ready? But he came at an inconvenient time. We don't talk this way anymore. But I remember when I first got saved, and we should. People would say things like, you really need to watch where you go and what you do. Would you like Jesus to come back while you're here or while you're doing this? We don't give that nearly enough thought today. That wasn't something we just mentioned all the once in a while. That was something we talked about every day. What are you doing? Well, would you really like Jesus to find that? Find you there? He'll come at, second of all, an inconvenient time. Third of all, it'll seem like a long time. Look at Matthew 25, 19. Matthew 25, 19. After a what? Long time. After a long time, the master of those servants returned. You know, again, if the master had returned right away, do you think they'd have been ready? Probably. My uncle had a saying whenever he hired somebody new, and you know, he'd hire somebody new, and man, that guy'd be going like gangbusters. I'd go, wow, what a worker he is. And my uncle would just shake his head because he knew more than I did. He'd say, new broom sweeps clean. New broom sweeps clean. Question isn't, can you sprint for the next 5 minutes for Jesus? It's, can you keep running for a long time? There's a lot of inertia behind us that just says, sit down for a little while. And you know who can be the person who's most affected by that? The person who at one point was really serving the Lord with great fervor. Remember the story of the tortoise and the hare? What did the hare think? I've run so far, so fast, I've done so much, I can just now sit down and rest. How many, after a great movement of God in their lives, have the attitude, look how far I've come, look at all I've done, look at where I've gone, I now can sit down and rest. Says it's a long time. Number three. Number one, this is our mail. Number two, be prepared. There's three points under most of these. Three points under be prepared. Not expected, bad time, long time. A, B, and C. Number three. And there's 3 points under this, A, B, and C. Jesus, be prepared. No, that's the... Who's on first? Only 2 points under that, because one and A and C are the same. They were servants. Number three. Jesus expected faithfulness. He expected faithfulness. Notice Matthew 24, verse 46. Matthew 24, 46. It would be good for that servant whose master finds him doing so when he returns. He expected faithfulness. It would be good to be doing that. Not, Jesus didn't say you can't do this, you know, it's just a pipe dream. He said it'd be good to be doing it. Look at Matthew 25, 6. At midnight, the cry ran out, here's the bridegroom, come out to meet him. Jesus expected that the virgins would be prepared, that they'd have their lamps and they'd have their oil, and even if he came at midnight, they would be there waiting. Notice Matthew 25:19. After a long time, the master of those servants returned and settled accounts. Expected faithfulness. We have this idea today that God doesn't expect much from us. That everything's fine. Jesus said when he comes, there'll be an accounting. And he's expecting faithfulness. I want you to notice just one little thing on this. I want you to notice that this is something, faithfulness is something that brings Jesus great pleasure. Look with me at what it says. Matthew chapter 25, verse 21. The master replied, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's joy or happiness. Why was the master happy? Why was the master happy? He says the same thing, verse 23. The exact same words with the person with two talents. Come share your master's joy or your master's happiness. Why was the master happy? He was happy because he found the servants had done what he'd asked them to do. It pleases the heart of God. You know, there's nothing better than having someone you love really step up to the plate and excel at what you ask them to do. Parents, doesn't that just, what does that do to you when you have a child that just steps up to the plate and does more than you'd ask? Doesn't that just do something? Let's go to the other side, because you see this in the third servant. Doesn't it just rip your heart out? To see children that give less than their best. Oh, it pleases. Faithfulness pleases God. Number four. There will be great reward. There will be great reward. Look at Matthew 24:47. Matthew 24:47. The servant who did what he was asked to do, who was faithful in discharging the household duties, he says, Matthew 24:47, I tell you the truth, he will put him in charge of all his possessions. You know, there's a lot of people who work for earthly promotions, who expect that yearly raise, who want to see recognition at work. Here's my question. What is your attitude towards wanting to please him? Look at the rewards. Put him in charge of everything. What a promotion. What a promotion. Look at the virgins. Matthew 25:10. Matthew 25:10. But while they were on their way to buy oil, the bridegroom arrived, and the virgins who were ready went in with him to the wedding banquet. Now, I've been to some very nice weddings in my time as a pastor. I've been to some very nice weddings, and I've been to some weddings that had a nice reception afterwards. But none of us here have ever been to what they had as a wedding banquet. Because their wedding banquet wasn't a nice day at Alito's or wherever, and a nice meal with those tiny forks, and you walk around with the plates and those hors d'oeuvres that cost $97 million per tray. I love how it is that you call up a catering place and say, well, I want to throw a party, and they go, okay, it's going to be, you know, $19 a person. They go, oh, great, it's going to be a wedding. That's $49 a person. Yeah. We got you, and we're going to squeeze you dry. But in Jesus' day, that wedding celebration went on for days. Night and day. The food flowed. The drink flowed. The celebration went on hour after hour. Started again the next day. Going to a wedding was the highlight of your year, if not your decade. And to go to a wedding of a king and to be the attendants and to get to sit at the head table? What a reward. What a reward. And then notice the parable of the talents. The one who had received 5 talents, who already had 10, it says, "You have been faithful," Matthew 25:21, "in a few things." That's just a little bit. Now, can you imagine somebody, let's be conservative and say $30,000. I know that the national average is even over that, but let's say $30,000 is a talent. A talent's maybe $30,000, probably more than that. But let's say, can you imagine 10 talents, $300,000? Anybody here, a check for $300,000, a small thing to you? Not a check that you're going to lose? Can you imagine somebody, you know, you hand them the check for $300,000. Here's your money back. And they go, "Oh, now I want to bring out the really important stuff." What? But this is $300,000. Yeah. Notice what it says. "You have been faithful in a few things." That's something tiny. That doesn't matter. "I will put you in charge of many things." Oh, look at the reward. The reward is incredible. I was listening to the radio this week. I don't know how many of you know who Warren Buffett is. Not a man you wish to emulate, even though he is very, very wealthy, one of the wealthiest people in not only in America but in the world. But he is a man who stands for everything Jesus is against and is against everything Jesus is for. Basically, he drew up a list of everything God hates and says, "This is what I'm going to love," and everything God loves and says, "This is what I'm going to hate." But in the 1970s, Berkshire Hathaway, which is his investment company, topped $1,000 per share in value. So if you wanted to buy one share of Berkshire Hathaway in the 1970s, you had to lay down $1,000. This week, it closed at, anyone want to take a guess? $200,000 per share. So if you'd have invested $10,000, bought just 10 shares 40 years ago, today you would have $2 million. Let me assure you, Warren Buffett has a lot more than 10 shares. Here's my point. The world can reward people 200 times over. What do you think Jesus can reward people? I want you to think about that before we so casually live lives of less than sold out dedication. Number five. There will be great loss. Notice Matthew 24:51. What if the servant begins to misbehave in the household? Notice he's still a servant. Notice he's still in the household. But what if he misbehaves? Matthew 24:51. He will be what? Cut to pieces. And assigned a place with the hypocrites where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Now, we can argue all day and all night, was the person saved? Wasn't he saved? Is this talking about going to hell? If it's not, I don't know what it's doing. But let me tell you this, there's none of us here that want to suffer what he suffered. Anybody want to hear from God's lips? Cut him into pieces and assign him a place with the hypocrites where they'll be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Does that sound like a very fun day? Terrible, terrible, terrible warning. There will be great loss. Notice the second parable. Matthew chapters 25, verses 11 and 12. Later, the other ones, the five virgins who didn't have oil, came. "Sir, sir," they said, "open the door for us." But he replied, "I tell you the truth, I don't even know you." Again, those are words I would never relish hearing from Jesus lips. I can think of few things worse in all the universe than hearing Jesus say, "I never knew you." And then finally, the last one, Matthew 25:30. "Throw that worthless servant outside into the darkness where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth." Terrible, terrible threat. There will be great loss. There's a lot at stake here, Jesus said. Don't take it lightly. Number six. This doesn't have any subpoints under it. This is a real simple one. They all serve as a warning. Every one of them give us a warning, don't they? And it's the same warning. Faithfulness is rewarded. Unfaithfulness suffers great loss. They all serve as a warning. Look at Matthew 25:13, which perfectly sums up this entire thing. Matthew 25:13. "Therefore," because all of this is true, "therefore keep watch." It amazes me. I simply, and many of you were not living in Christ in those days, but it just astounds me at how much excitement there was about the return of Christ 40 years ago. And they were saying, these things are going to happen, which we have already seen happen. And we have less excitement than they did, and they hadn't seen them yet. "Therefore, keep watch, because you do not know the day or the hour." I can remember a time when people used to call one another in the morning and when they were waking up, and that was before cell phones. You had to actually go down to this thing that hung on the wall with this weird spinny thing on it that people today don't even know how to work. What's this? You still have yours hooked up? It still works? Oh. And you know what? The batteries never go dead, and you never lose them. We've got a phone hidden someplace in our house. I still don't know where it is. And you know, if you get it in time and push the button, it'll beep. But if you wait too long, if you don't figure out that it's missing for too long, the battery goes dead and then it doesn't even beep. Yeah. Oh. You don't know what the day or the hour is. I can remember people calling up when you had to go all the way to the living room or kitchen or wherever the phone was to pick up, and you hear something like, "Today could be the day. Today could be the day." I've got to ask us, how often do we start our day saying, today could be the day? Today could be the day. Last one. Here we go. Last one. The odds in all of them are alarming. In the parable of the unjust steward, it would be good if he did what he was told. On the other hand, suppose he doesn't. It's 50-50, isn't it? 50-50. In the parable of the 10 virgins, there were 9 wise and 1 foolish one. How'd she get in there? No? There were 5 and 5, 50-50. In the parable of the talents, there are 3 servants. 2 of them are commended. 1 is condemned. The odds are 66-33. What's Jesus trying to say? This is not some hypothetical threat. This isn't something that, it could happen, but, it never will. This is a real situation, folks. Take it seriously. I don't know if you've ever looked at these 3 parables and compared them this way. But when you do, you see that Jesus was teaching a very important message. He committed 3, 2 of which are some of the longest parables he tells. He committed 3 parables to 1 message. Be ready. Now, if Jesus said be ready, then what do you think we should do? We better be ready, hadn't we? It's so easy to get stirred up for a moment. I think that's the great curse of America today. We were walking out of Moses Friday afternoon, and there was an older gentleman who was walking out in front of us, going out the steps. He said, "Man, if anybody was an unbeliever," and notice his words, "if," there were 2,000 people there. I don't know that it's possible in America to gather 2,000 people together anywhere of any kind and say, yeah. He said, if anyone was an unbeliever here today, there's no way they didn't get saved through that. I wonder how many people it's even affecting their lives today, 2 days later. It's so easy to get stirred up for a moment, isn't it? To get excited. And then like a sandcastle sitting on the shore, the waves of this world roll in and the sand just eats away. And you look back and it's all gone. Jesus is saying, don't let that happen to you. Here's the good news as we close. He said, it's possible for that steward to make it. It would be good. It will be good if he finds him doing that. He said, there were virgins who went in and got the dinner. They made it. He said, there were servants who were faithful. They invested their talents and they went to work. And when the master came, they heard, well done. And we can be one of them. Let's bow together. Oh God, you have given us encouragement and at the same time great warning. You have stood us on that Mount of Olives just like Joshua did so many years before and said, choose who you're going to serve. Be the servant who did what his master said. Be the wedding attendant who fulfilled their responsibility. Lord, grant us grace that our hearts might cry out to you, oh God, you are able. Let me live for you this way. In Jesus' name, amen.